in December of 1968, some of the biggest names in rock and roll came together to film a concert organized by the Rolling Stones.
You've heard of Oxford Circus. You've heard of Piccadilly Circus. And this is the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus, and we've got sights and sounds and marbles to delight your eyes and ears.
Over 2 days, the Stones recorded with the hottest musicians of the time, The Who, John Lennon, Eric Clapton, among others. The concert was meant to air on the BBC.
But the band wanted some reshoots. Momentum got lost, even the film got lost. Decades later, the reels were found in a barn in France. Recordings were first released in 1996, and there is now a remastered film and concert album. Producer Kat Aaron brings us this look at that nearly lost recording.
Welcome back, everybody.
Picture a 25-year-old Mick Jagger dressed as a circus ringmaster. Top hat, red tails, bow tie. December 68, the Rolling Stones are young and world famous, and they wanted a concert film for their new album. Not just any film. They wanted a circus. A real one. Trapeze artists, knife thrower, fire swallower, a live tiger, and the bands.
The Who, Jethro Tull, Taj Mahal, Marianne Faithfull, John Lennon, Eric Clapton, and the Rolling Stones was the 1960s in one room.
Michael Lindsay Hogg, a young director, shot the show.
On the day, I knew that it was more than a rock and roll show. It was almost a document of its times. And I had a sense that things could not last in this glorious way.
The set was on a small soundstage in West London, with striped walls and a U of bleachers surrounding the circus ring. The audience was invited through an ad in a rock magazine and the Stones fan club. They all look very late 60s, with both men and women wearing bright ponchos and felt hats.
Her man's been gone for nigh on a year. He was due home yesterday, but he ain't here.
In the ring, The Who's lead singer, Roger Daughtry, is wearing skin-tight leather pants and an open vest over a bare chest. The Who had just come off tour, and they are at the top of their game, tight and ferocious.
You're all forgiven.
The John Lennon-Eric Clapton supergroup, The Dirty Mac, was a little looser. They were a last-minute addition, explains Lindsay Hogg.
All the performers in the show had basically come out of a little address book in Mick Jagger's back pocket. He looks up Al, he calls John, and then John says, he'll do it.
In the film, there's an interlude where Lennon and Jagger are sitting down, mugging for the camera, and pretending they're on an American talk show.
John, I want to talk to you about your new group, the Dirty Mac, which you got together for tonight's show.
We've got Mitch Mitchell from the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Are you really?
Yeah, really. Oh, very, very.
The circus was the Dirty Mac's one and only performance. At rehearsal, they did the Beatles' Revolution, and Lennon couldn't quite remember how to play it.
I can't remember what happens in the solo. Just for 12 bars.
For the show, they did a jam with a classical violinist and Yoko Ono. The film was being shot with fancy new French cameras that no one quite knew how to use. They kept breaking down. And as the day went on, the artists got less and less sober. Brian Jones, the Stones' first bandleader, was in rough shape.
Brian Jones was, you know, a sad character.
David Dalton covered the event for Rolling Stone magazine. He spoke to filmmaker Robin Klein about it for a commentary track on a previous release of the film.
He almost looked as if he had become the kind of scapegoat for all the sins of swinging London. You know, he just looked like the gods had shunned him and turned their back on him, you know.
Jones wasn't the only one struggling with drugs. Marianne Faithfull had a sweetheart image at the time, but she, like so many others in that world, was using heroin. In the film, Jagger sings "You Can't Always Get What You Want" straight into the camera, but Dalton says he was also singing to Faithfull.
Because the song was written for her and about her.
At the time of the circus, heroin hadn't fully taken over that scene. But it was looming.
I guess that's kind of the first time I sort of felt, oh my God, you know, it's not getting better all the time.
Marianne Faithfull also spoke to Robin Klein.
Everybody knew something was coming, and it did.
Jimi Hendrix died, Janis Joplin died, Jim Morrison died, Brian Jones died. There was an apocalyptic air about the whole thing.
Faithfull herself overdosed the next year and spent many years struggling with addiction. But in this moment, that was all in the future. David Dalton.
It was just still at the point when everybody thought rock was going to inherit the earth. We all assumed Mick, Keith were on the phone to Fidel and Mao, and, you know, Mick was going to become a member of parliament and say delusionary, if you wish, but it really was a sort of inspiring time. And of course, it was just a little over a year later that everything would fall apart.
A year later, almost to the day, the Stones played at California's Altamont Speedway. An audience member was stabbed near the foot of the stage and died.
When you watch the Rock and Roll Circus, it looks like a rehearsal for the terrible events that happened at Altamont.
James Riley is a lecturer at Cambridge University and the author of Bad Trip, a book about the end of the 60s.
You see a band in transition. They're moving into a sort of diabolical, Luciferian set of personae, particularly on the part of Mick Jagger.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm May, Will, and James.
At 5 a.m., the circus is finally winding down.
There's nothing left for us to say, really, but to sing you one last good nightly song and to wish you all good night.
Everyone's sitting on the bleachers, too tired to stand. The Stones, the other artists, the fans. They've cycled through two audiences, they'd been filming for more than a day, and parents were calling the studio looking for their kids. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards are swaying and singing. Marianne Faithfull's in front of them. Lennon's in the back row. James Riley.
I think it is impossible to see this without thinking of the tragic histories that befell a lot of these individuals, but what this film has captured is that pivot point. It captures all these characters just as they are moving from one phase to another. We also see a sort of classically 60s attempt to create a sort of temporary new world. But those are always going to be somewhat fragile.
For NPR News, I'm Kat Aaron.